Thank you, Deborah. Our next presenter is Rowdy Heiser. Rowdy has a BS degree in occupational safety and health from Montana Tech. He's a certified safety professional. He is a safety manager at Solvay Chemicals in Green River, Wyoming. He's been employed for 20 years as a safety and health professional in both large-scale surface and underground mining operations. The title of his presentation is Field Level Risk Assessment, a Safety Culture. Rowdy?
While he's pulling up the presentation, I'll give a little bit of framework for Rowdy's presentation. My name is Joe Vendetti, and I'm the mine operations manager at Solvay Chemicals. I'll start by saying that every year in the year leading into the Longwall USA show, there's a meeting with the planning committee. And I take part in those meetings with the planning committee. And last June, there was a desire to talk some about risk assessment. And the conversation was looking at our next generation miners. How do we bring another generation into our industry? And specifically, how do we cross-train people to be ready for the challenges specific to safety in our industry that presents so many challenges, keeping people healthy? When I listened to the conversation, I offered our organization up to give this presentation because it's exactly what we do. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the operation before Rowdy starts. We are located in Wyoming, and every state has its stuff. And in Wyoming, we listen to a lot of wildlife jokes, and Wyoming is in the state of Wyoming. I want you to know that up front. Our operation is in the southwest corner. It's located 20 miles west of Green River. And if you've driven I-80 across the United States, as you see Green River, our operation is visible from the interstate. There are three longwalls operating in Wyoming, two of them in the underground Trona industry, located at our operation, and the other one at Tronox, and a third underground longwall operating at the Bridger Power Plant and their underground coal mine operation. That's located just a little west of Rock Springs. This is a picture of our operation, and you can see clear lines of demarcation of expansion over the years. That's the original plant. And then phase one expansion, phase two expansion, headframes from our original two shafts, and we've since added a third shaft with the headframe and the fans over here. Today we're developing towards and working towards the commissioning of a number four ventilation shaft that starts in January. The operation is a soda ash refinery. It uses the mineral Trona. If you type the word Trona, you're going to get corrected as a misspelled word, but it is a word. It is a mineral. The plant produces roughly 3 million tons of soda ash and diversified products. Diversified products or derivatives being other products that come from the mineral Trona. Soda ash is produced at roughly a 1.56 ore to ash ratio. So for every ton of soda ash, we must mine 1.56 tons of ore. This is a map of our mine. We have an obvious structure right here that we refer to as the anomalous zone. It's just the banks of the existing ore body. We started longwalling in our operation as a means to control safety and rock mechanics after one of the largest mining collapses in the history of underground mining occurred when a 1 square mile area right here collapsed at seismic velocity in 1995. So we got into the longwall business as a means of controlling stability. We started the longwall here with 1 mile panels, 500-foot face. We run a narrow face because of the rock mechanics specific to our geology. We've since moved the longwall to the southeast portion of our mine where the ore grade is better. Of the 460 employees working at Solvay, 190 of them reside underground. That includes our hoist operators, mechanics, everybody to produce roughly 4.8 million tons this year. And we are set and staffed to produce the 5 million tons that's coming as recent as next year, hopefully. We do solution mine. Trona is a soluble mineral. We solution mine as we put tailings underground. When you look at our mine, we're unique to Longwall in that a lot of the mine is developed with bore miners doing the work, not a lot different than a continuous miner with chevron rooms. Those areas are developed to put tailings back in the mine. We mine a 93% ore grade. That other 7% and some of the additives from the plant go back into the mine. And we put them back in these panels and solution mine from the water that decants from that process. Our longwall face is 625 feet. Just ordered two new AFCs, two new shears. And if you look at Longwall Associates display, that's one of our pan sections headed for Wyoming later this year. We have seven bore miners. We run a continuous haulage, an old pneumatic continuous haulage without OEM support that we maintain and operate, build parts ourselves. And we run shuttle cars. Because of the framework of environmental responsibilities with tailings, the mains development for a mine that has 70 years of lifespan in the ore bed that we're mining today, it has multiple beds, so we'll be a multiple seam mine in time. The mains and the layout of the mine are a significant burden and challenge for us, yet a welcome burden and challenge. When you spread the tons between mains development for tailings disposal, mains going to a new vent shaft, and then developing for your longwall, it leaves us to approximately 55% of our total production can come from the longwall. So that's unique in the way of a longwall operation. We'll mine 2.5 million tons with a system fully capable of mining 5 million tons. Now talk a little bit about our operating strategy, which is why I offered us up for the risk assessment presentation. Our operating strategy seeks to provide employees with a diverse set of skills. And our pay system supports this. We're one of the few mines where every employee in the mine can receive our highest rate of pay. We have five pay grades, and if you come into our mine completely inexperienced, within approximately 5 years, you can reach the highest rate of pay. But depending on what department you're in, you have to achieve the equivalency of a grade five or highest rate of pay in your production department, if that's where you reside, and the equivalent of a grade three or mid-range pay for our utility tailings department and our maintenance department. What that says, and it exists in every of the three departments, in order to reach a highest rate of pay, you must be trained to the highest level within your specific department and the equivalent of mid-range level in all other departments. Longwall specific, our crews are established like this. We have 190 employees in the mine, and 18 of those employees are specifically assigned to the longwall, and that's it. Our longwall face, if you were to come and see us, and I would invite anybody to come and see us, give us a call, and we'd love to show you our operation. If you go on the longwall face, you're going to see a foreman and three operators. We religiously monitor the head gate. Our foreman and the other two operators will operate the shear, pull shields, and push pan. We have two mechanics that are assigned, and they overlap these crews. They help do inspections and develop the preventive work orders that take place one day a week. One day each week, a maintenance crew, highly trained individuals that maybe worked in a bore panel yesterday, will come into our longwall today. They'll team up with these production personnel, and they'll perform all work orders and preventive maintenance. Breakdown maintenance is taken care of by the people on the face, and they're cross-trained and developed to that set of skills. So that lays a framework that explains why cross-training is so important to us. Our production personnel must know a lot about maintenance, and our maintenance personnel operate the equipment in a production mode at times. Our utility personnel are no different. If a longwall operator's on vacation, the utility person will come in and take over. With that framework, I'll introduce you now to Rowdy Heiser and let you explain what we do in the way of risk assessment. And I'd ask you to pay specific attention to field level risk assessment. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. When Joe and I were putting this presentation together, he said, you know, Rowdy, he said, I got about 8 slides. It'll take me about 3 minutes. I said, okay, Joe. Now, Joe's a good miner. He's a proud miner, and he's proud of our people, our operation, and he could spend hours talking about it. Switch gears a little bit. As Joe mentioned, we've got a workforce that's dynamic. They're professionals. They're skilled. The inherent practices that we have in the mine and the culture that we build in our cross-training provides people with an opportunity to come into the mine with or without a set of skills, develop and be juiced up about it in a process where they can expand and one day be from running a miner to be an electrician, a shuttle car operator one day to working in utility. And when you look at that from a safety perspective, you step back and you think, wait a minute. I can remember conversations going into a section and looking and saying, I thought you was on Billy Howard's utility crew. He says, I am. I said, what are you doing running a miner? That's where they need me. And you stop and think about that, and you say, how do you train, educate? You can't write enough procedures, nor would you want to. But you got to create a mindset and a culture where people understand risk. It's not easy. So, as Joe mentioned, we've got this wonderful workforce, capital infrastructure we continually invest in. We live in Wyoming. We've got a natural resource we've been responsible to mine. Why do we need to do anything else? But we had a reason to change. First and foremost, we had a group of folks that were committed. You can't work in an underground environment and not encounter safety. You can't. It's around you. You got regulations. You've got company policies. Our people understood safety. They understood what it meant to them and the importance of it. But the fact of the matter was we had people confused, and they didn't trust us. And I say they didn't trust us. Who? I'm talking supervisors trusting managers. I'm talking Joe trusting me. I'm talking miners being able to have the ability to come up and communicate freely and tell you things that weren't popular. So as a result of that, they were confused. Do you want this? Do you want safety? You want production? What do you want? Tell us. We'll get it to you. We were experiencing injuries at an unacceptable rate. In 2010, it was painful. The VP of operations, my boss at that time, Ron Hughes, good man. A man that had been mining in coal mines, worked his way into the Trona mines 30, 40 years. There was no doubt in my mind he understood what safety meant. And there was no doubt about his commitment to safety. He just didn't know how to get it. He didn't know how to get it. We had 3 amputations in 2010. And I'm not talking about little ones. Changed people's lives. We had, I'm going to call them near misses, but events that 2 inches one way or the other could have been fatal. We started defaulting back to past practices. What do I mean by that? Somebody get hurt. What'd you do? Why'd you do that? Don't do it again. Don't be like that dumb, right? We started faulting back to that, not realizing it. We lacked really good methods and tools. We didn't know how to manage safety effectively in the field. And in fact, we became frustrated, reactionary, and we were not aligned. None of us. Nope. So here's where our challenges were. We could not understand how to manage risk to an acceptable level. And I say acceptable level, why? If you're sitting there and you're in your operation, think about it for a minute. Can you manage out all risk? We started developing tools which were adding value called field level risk assessment. I'll talk a little bit about that. But it was a challenge for us. When you start talking to people and they say, hey, we want you to do a risk assessment. And they say, well, Rowdy, we do that all the time. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. I said, I'm not sure. At what level and at depth do you go into? Shifting the mindsets of a workforce. We had a culture. And I know that word's used freely. But in fact, we had people that had grown up in that mind. They were proud. They learned both good and bad habits from their predecessors. Actively participates and embraces safety, right? People excited about safety. Used to say, it's okay to talk about safety. It wasn't seen as something that was cool. And then align the management team. I'm going to start there real quick. I said we had to let go of traditional beliefs and approaches. The first thing we had to do as managers is realize we could not fix the problem. We couldn't fix it. Joe, our operations folks, plant manager, we couldn't fix it. Guys used to fixing things. Got a problem, we'll fix it. We couldn't fix it. It wasn't ours to fix. As managers, we had to become predictable. People had to have a level of trust and understand that when something came out of the mine, they knew how we were going to react. In a way that embraced the information, whatever it may have been, embraced the incident itself. The very accident is as tough as it is at times to not look at who, but why, how, what. It was huge. I had to be predictable. Joe had to understand exactly where I was at when something went south and didn't have to ask. And I knew exactly where he was at. Same with the plant manager and the other members of our management team, our HR folks. We had to learn from mistakes versus punishing those who made them. It's tough. Disciplinary action. Remember long conversations. Got a near miss report. Violation of lockout tagout, the essence of safety when you think about it. And the first thing was, who was it? I said, wait a minute. Are we worried about who, or do we have a bigger problem? And we had to develop expect people to change from following rules to looking at using tools. Field level risk assessment started that transformation for us. And in fact, let's talk about this for a minute. Got an accident triangle, right? Three legs to it. In order to have an accident, what do you have to have? Anybody? Give me something. Nobody in the room's had an accident. You have to have a person, right? What else you have to have? Equipment, machinery. What else you have to have? You have to have energy. So stop and think about it for a minute. Go back and think about when you've either been involved in an accident or you've had someone hurt on your crew or at your facility. You had someone interacting with machinery and equipment, and there was some sort of energy released. Chain broke, struck somebody. Hydraulic cylinder hose broke. Top come in. And in fact, field level risk assessment for us is really that simple. So just like the fire triangle, the accident triangle, we're focused on what? Eliminating one of the legs. That's it. You can chase people. You can chase machinery and equipment. And in fact, you need to. You got to invest in people. But every person in this room has an inherent risk profile that is different. Machinery and equipment, things will fail. You have PM processes in place. Energy's the one that, for me, I had to really get and talk to folks extensively about and understanding when energy is released, where are we positioned? Have we identified all the energies? And in fact, once we started dialoguing in this manner, people could relate to it. And we started talking about when you can identify something, then you can control it. Or at least you can start managing it to what? An acceptable risk level. There are jobs we do that are in the red. I mean, that's the way it is. But when you're in the red, you better be dialed in. You better know where those energies are at. When you're pulling a leg cylinder up on the long wall and you're tugging it and pulling it, you better assume what? That the chain or cable will break. Not if, but it will. And what could them consequences be? So we started talking in terms of probability and consequence. And you know the consequence. But how do you reduce something? You put in enough barriers in place to keep reducing what? The probability. Think about it. It's all around us. Seatbelt. Not talking on your phone. Pre-op on your car. You're reducing what? Probability. It started the mindset of folks. People with tools in their hand could say, okay, I can make sense of that. I can make sense of that. But it wasn't enough because, just like anything, safety can throw it out there. And what do you get? It may be a conversation that happens from a leader, key person in our operation, to a frontline foreman in the mine. Goes like this. Hey, you may hear something about this risk assessment, but don't worry. We do it all the time already. Okay? This was the next step for us. We started realizing early on that our supervisors weren't the problem. They were the solution. And I mentioned it earlier about us relinquishing as managers, saying, listen, we own this, but we're not going to fix it alone. We have about 100, roughly 100 people on site. Joe mentioned the mine at 180 people. Excuse me. But in total headcount, we've got 465 in a dynamic surface operation. Within that group, we have about 100 people, 100 people who actively impact people, contractors, our own people, engineers, planners, supervisors, foremen. We brought them into a room just like this. It was simple. We didn't twig onto it right away, though. And the plant manager, Joe, myself, the other members of the management team said, listen, we got a case for change. We're hurting people, and we're frustrated. And we know that you're frustrated, too. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're going to ask you what we should do collectively. And we coined it the club. It was easy. If you're in a club, you reach down, you pick that guy up. We said, we got you. At 2 o'clock in the morning, when you make a decision and something goes wrong, but you utilize the tools, risk assessment, safety interactions, hazard and corrections, identifications, our three rings. If you use those tools and something goes wrong, we got you. If you don't use them, you're on an island. And it started changing. And leaders started leading. And we talked about what does it mean to be an effective safety leader. And when you got your foreman telling you, the effective safety leader does this. Well, when they leave there, They do it because that's what they believe. So we started that club concept. It was a catalyst in developing and shaping our safety culture and our workforce. Now we got leaders leading, workforce going, they're serious. And we got the right tools to be able to assess risk. All right. It was a platform for us to manage risk to an acceptable level. As I mentioned, our leaders were leading. They had clear expectations. They knew what we were asking of them. We evolved into what we've called the three rings of safety. Very simple concept. It provides the right tools. Safety interactions. What is an interaction? Well, it's just that. We asked our leaders, and they asked us for tools to be able to go and have an interaction with their people in a positive manner and reinforce the positive things that they were seeing. Pretty soon, we have a club meeting. One of our production supervisors raises his hand and says, hey, my guys on my crew are wondering why we're not doing that, doing safety interactions. The day I was waiting for. I didn't have to tell them to. So we introduce it into a workforce. Right now, we've got about 1,400 safety interactions per month. I'm not saying they're all quality. I'm not saying they're all, we track it and trend it. I am saying there's an engagement tool, though, that people are using, seeing value in it. This led to the creation of a culture where you could visibly see people and actively participate. They were engaged. And we enhanced our abilities to further develop and mature in other systems. It's not difficult to go review our lockout, tagout policy, confined space, working at heights, critical risk procedures, safety management systems, OSAS 18001. We're doing things in safety that we thought we'd never be able to do. I know you can't read this. I call it the transformation. It's not meant to be read. On the left is a near-miss report. We track near misses as a key performance indicator at our facility in safety. People say, well, you want a bunch of near misses? No. I know we're having near misses, and I want quality ones turned in. This came in on the right from a supervisor with his crew. You can see the risk assessment matrix in the top. I could spend hours talking about it. And they were doing a job and removing some 4-inch pipe. And they'd sat down as a crew and went through the steps of what they were going to do, how they were going to manage the risk and implement controls. They talked about a post-job review, minute by minute, as they were doing the job, what was changing and what were they inducing into it. And then at the end of it, they did have a near miss, and he turned in a near miss. And a near miss is what? An opportunity to share and educate and chase things down if you have an engineering or administrative or those types of things. So I show you this because the supervisor was not one that early on was bought in. He didn't see the value. And I told him, I said, Richie, go find it, but it's there. So you had to have some patience. I've summed up in really, 15 minutes now? 8 years. And there's a lot more to it. But we've got a culture today that when you look at safety, they are engaged. And the things that we provided and the tools that we have in place aren't things that I have to continually maintain or promote, because people do see the value in it, and they're using them. I'm going to turn it back over to Joe here real quick and wrap things up. Sorry. My message would be this. Find field-level risk assessment in your organization. I'm not talking about PHAs and HAZOPs. I'm talking about basic field-level risk assessment tool. Find it. It adds value. Alignment of our key players. Without that, we wouldn't have been able to progress. It's not that we had to like each other. We had to work with each other, and we had to understand each other. We embraced the concept where we brought our supervisors in and didn't tell them what to do. We asked them, what should we do collectively, and we supported them. And we let go of traditional approaches and mentalities. We did. We had some incidents that occurred during this process. It would have been easy to revert back. Define your approach and stay committed. We started 8 years ago. We haven't changed. It's the same. It isn't. Our workforce doesn't have to wonder what's coming and going. What's the next safety? Oh. That dang it, you.
So now you're looking at a graph that is our history. And if you go back to the year 2000, that's not a history to be proud of. Those are MSHA reportable injuries split into the three categories of reportable, restricted duty, lost time, and the top blue line being the total. And I would say, as you look at that graph and you go to 2008, we introduced risk assessment. And the response, as Rowdy said, was, well, we do that. We said, no, we're not talking about looking both ways before you cross the road. That's not risk assessment. We want a conscious effort from you before a job starts to identify the energies, get rid of them if possible, place barriers between yourself and those energies if not possible, and at the very least be aware of everything that can happen. And that's a conscious effort before you do the job. But the part of coming together as a group of managers was such a key part of this work. And every operation has good tools. But how you use those tools, I believe, is the key. Safety is not a mystery. And we all have common strategies. We all share a common objective, but we all go about it different. When you go back to 2006 and 7 and 8, and I'm going to go as recent as when we started the club in 2010. Prior to that, when something happened, everybody got mad. And I tell you, a pot of geraniums can get mad. That's not how you fix safety. When we told our leaders and brought them together and asked them, like Rowdy said, asked them for their help. Specifically, here's how we started. We broke out into work groups, and we asked them to come back and tell us, what does a safety leader look like? What does a safety leader do? And they come back and told us, you'd create the same list here today. Then we also asked our workforce, why do people get hurt? Think about it. Why do they get hurt? Well, they get hurt maybe a lack of training, wrong tool for the wrong job, mind not on task, eyes not on task, fatigue. You start listing all those things. It's all part of our framework. But the management group today tells everybody, if you're doing work in the best interest of our organization and yourself and you make a mistake, we've got your back. But you have to use our tools. In 2008, we all do it. As time progressed and we told them we wanted a conscious effort, we started to get that. Before the work started, we got a conscious effort. I said, but does it have to be a formal risk assessment? We said, no. We ask for formal risk assessments on a certain level with the form that Rowdy showed. But you can do a risk assessment with no paperwork. Just please do the risk assessment. And then as we improved and the statistics started supporting, we got the three rings of safety and we pulled everything together. And then we started driving, saying a minute-by-minute risk assessment's critical. Because it's all the time. Think about it. You got to be on your game all the time. Minute-by-minute risk assessment. And I think we all knew we were somewhere when we were talking in an awareness meeting, we call them, with the entire rotation, and came from the workforce. They said, Joe, minute by minute's not good enough. It's second by second. That's our workforce telling us that. When I look at 2015, for me, I'm 36 years in our industry, both underground coal at a steep pitching, longwall, two-entry development operation, and underground Trona, longwall operation. My first 16 years in this industry was in the safety profession. And I went into operations in 1991. My time since has been in operations. I'm telling you, as recent as 5 years ago, I still didn't believe that we could achieve 2014. I'm being honest with you. But today, I think that zero is possible. The phone used to ring a lot. Today it doesn't. No guarantees. We have a challenging industry. But we brought, there's Rowdy, myself, there's five other key supervisors from our organization out here in the crowd. If you ask any of them, they'll tell you the same thing. I hope you have interest to ask more questions. It is a standing invitation for anybody interested in our industry, our mining industry, to come and see us. We'd be glad to show you what we do and welcome you to come to Wyoming and visit us. And if you have any questions, we'll do our best to answer them. The question is, do we see a similar trend in compliance? And my head's nodding. Yes, we have. Now, I don't have the memory to tell you what a typical regular inspection was for us in the previous years, but I will tell you that our last three inspections have yielded four, and five citations in an underground operation that's 25 square miles in size, 5 million tons a year established, 190 employees, and we stay on compliance tight. We do audits in front, our own internal audits. We have employees dialed in on permissibility. We comply with the same regulations as underground coal in terms of permissibility. We liberate 7 million cubic feet of methane daily. We have GovVent boreholes. We compress, dehydrate, run it to the plant. It's a complex operation. Our compliance graph mirrors this. Yes? The question is asking about the competencies required for our training program as we take somebody through the five pay grades. And the answer to that is yes as well. To go from a grade one when somebody comes in brand new, the only thing they're trained in before going to grade two is safety-related items, understanding our emergency evacuation plan in detail. Not looking at the map and saying, okay, green's primary, red's secondary. We go into more detail. And then we test employees both with a written and a practical exam at every level. Safety is a part of every level training. Because the work itself, there's no difference in safety and the work that gets done. We manage five critical functions of business, and that's safety, productivity, cost, quality, and morale. All five of those are embedded and ingrained in everything we do and how we think. And we used to ask, what's the most important out of those five? And the traditional answer is safety. We all can have opinions. My personal opinion is morale is the single most critical of those five significant steps of a good, well-run business. If you think you have good safety and people are coming to work mad every day and upset, disgruntled, you're kidding yourself. That's personal opinion. When people come to work with a smile on their face and they're engaged and they're chasing something, then you got a chance safety-wise. But grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 safety is embedded in every bit of that because we have work we want done to a certain standard, and it encompasses a complete packet for everything that's checked off on that training.
One other quick note on what Joe said. It is the mine progression, but my department administers it. So we administer the testing. So if there's an employee that needs to be tested, I've got an individual in my department in safety that'll go down and do the testing in seam with him and validate that, along with his foreman validating that he's demonstrated it as well. So it's integrated right in between Joe and me and our departments.
Thank you.
For those of you who have joined us late, we did have to cancel our last presentation due to some flight issues. I just want to thank all the presenters. They provided excellent presentations today, and that concludes the session. Thank you.